Hello, and welcome to another episode of Scavenger Life. This is episode number 406. 406.
Cool. Well, welcome back, Ryan.
It's nice welcome to be back.
Jay.
It's nice to be back home after a lovely trip.
Yeah, so last week we did not post a podcast, which is very...
very unusual.
Unlikely of us.
Even when we're traveling.
Yeah.
But it was a busy, busy day.
We just got kind of overwhelmed. We went to Seattle, Washington, and did a week-long video job. That's our, like, career work job.
It was really funny because that day, that Sunday, I was planning on, like, taking a chunk of time, doing the podcast, and then we were in bed at night, and I was like, oh my God, this day, like, flew by.
Yeah, you know? Especially since we're on East Coast time, so, you know, 8 o'clock there is like 11 o'clock at night, so it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was good to see that people, though, were still posting their numbers and talking.
Yeah.
So, we sold, while we were gone, 35 items.
Not bad.
Not bad at all.
Not bad.
So, you know, as everyone knows who listens to us, we just change our handling time.
Yep.
And we continue
to sell.
To sell. We don't put our store on vacation. We just change the handling time. So when someone buys, it tells them very clearly this will get shipped in, you know, X amount of time.
Yep.
And people still buy.
People still buy.
Yep. And we, you know, message people just to let them know, just to remind them if it's, you know, more than a week or something. But if it's just a couple days.
This time it's just a week. So
I mean,
it's not.
There are some buyers that have all the time. 3 to 5 day handling times.
Yeah,
anywhere.
Normally.
Like it's normal.
So that was good. I was happy about that.
So it was nice to sell.
It was nice to sell. So we always like added up in our heads. We're like, okay, we were selling on eBay. Our Airbnbs were being rented. And we were making money at a video job. It's like a triple threat.
Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah.
All these little...
It's a lot of work.
Definitely not passive income, but...
this is not passive income. Anybody who thinks so...
It's kind of like semi-passive.
It's like... I need another like word for it. And it feels like a combination of juggling and spinning plates.
Mm.
No, because... like you're working, but you're like
when people say the spinning plates,
spinning plates,
that's
not so
like
much.
Disaster.
Yeah, disaster
waiting
okay,
to happen.
Plates. But like juggling. Okay, let's think about juggling for a second. This is a hilarious thing because we were at our friend's house like 6 months ago, and you picked up 3 oranges and started juggling.
I did.
And I was like, okay, Jay and I have been together for 15 years. I have never seen him juggle. I was like, what?
It's like one thing I taught is myself as a kid. Like, you know, imagine a young boy in his backyard.
Just like hanging
learning,
out.
And then finally you get it and you're like, oh, this is how it works.
So juggling is interesting because when you're juggling, you're only holding like one ball at a time, but the rest are in the air. So it's kind of like, and I don't mean juggling in a bad way. Like I'm juggling all this stuff.
Okay.
It's sort of like,
so
you know.
I don't see it being like that.
I'm trying to...
that a metaphor or I think it's more like
you
have all these little parts and you put it all together and you oil it up and you get it started. It's a machine. It's not passive because if you walk away, things are going to start happening and the machine will break down.
Right.
But the its machine is basically going on its own and you have to like turn this knob, add a little oil here, turn that knob, put some fuel in. You know, it's like you have to maintain it and monitor it, but basically it runs on its own. That's how I see what we're doing.
Yeah.
So every eBay message that comes in, you're like turning
an answer.
Right. Every time you list some more stuff, you're putting some fuel in there.
There you go. Yep.
That's what it's like.
Yep. What is shipping in that equation? Because I'm about to ship 40 items.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the whole thing.
Yeah. But... it's nice. Okay, so you actually came up with the podcast topic this week.
This was so funny, right? So we were talking to our other tech friends at this job. We were talking to a friend of ours who, you know, does a similar job to us, and he had a funny philosophy about money. Basically, he's like, I don't care about money.
Well, he's like, you know, he's 35 years old, so he's like youngish. But he's getting to that age where, you know, things are going to start to become more important.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about our lives because, you know, it's like us. He's like, he calls himself a mercenary.
Mercenary.
You know, he goes on different jobs. He gets hired by all kinds of different people. He's only 1099.
Yep.
I know he does very well for himself. Yes. And we asked him what he did with his money. And he just says, I just spend it. You know, like I make a money, I spend it. And when I need more,
I work more.
Right. And so I actually, in the hallway of this conference center we were at, I was having a lunch conversation with him and two other younger guys about the same age, like late 30s, you know?
Mid-late 30s. Right.
And I was more like kind of an observer of the conversation.
Yeah, you were there.
A station. You know, these are really smart, talented guys who I bet they all make over $100,000 each. And they were basically talking about their hobbies.
Right.
One guy builds his own like gaming consoles, and I don't mean just like a console. He built himself like a chair that has servos and moves.
Like a VR chair.
When he does driving games, and it's plugged into a VR headset. So basically he's like driving and it's moving him, and he built it from scratch. And he said, I spent as much as this on like a car.
Like he could buy a car with the money he spent building.
He spent over $20,000. Yeah. He said like a used car. So over $20,000.
We're like a used car for $20,000. Right. He's joking.
And then the other guys were talking about their hobbies, and it turned out they all collect guns. And, and it's none of them knew that the other ones had guns. But these are kind of like a liberally kind of people. So people don't normally talk about guns. But there is a world where there are you know, progressive people that gather guns. So one guy's like, yeah, I have 17 guns. Oh, I have 19 guns. You know, I have 20 something guns. And it's so interesting. And you know, that is not cheap
either. Those are like, you're not buying, like, these are the kind of people who they're like, I want the best one.
Right.
You know, they're not just oh, I got to use you 22.
And they pulled out their phones and they're like showing each other pictures, you know, like this sniper rifle and like all this stuff. And it's a, you know.
Yeah, that's a whole other.
And one guy, interestingly, he's from Portland. He runs like a gun class.
Like a self-defense.
For people who are trans.
Yeah, like transgendered. Like,
which is so interesting.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah.
Such a, like. You're like. That's very American,
like,
you know.
It's such an interesting, like, double layer. Because I think people always think it's, like, the conservative people that have guns. And I'm like, no, there's actually a lot of people who are, like, super liberal and, like. They have guns too.
Yeah.
You know,
anyway,
they're just the hidden.
It's what this conversation is about specifically. But it's about basically disposable income. And it's not that they asked me what I did with my it's money, because I was just, you know, asking a question. But if they did ask me, I mean, what I spend my money on, money is like I'm building.
Well, so we were walking down the street and we were talking about that conversation that you had and just the other conversations we had during the week. And I remember that phrase, disposable income. And number one, I think that's a very dangerous idea. And it's a super capitalistic in a bad way.
It's like a marketing idea. Like if you make a money, it's just, you know, after it, you pay rent and food, everything else is just disposable. Just get rid of that money. Just like throw it away.
Right. So when that thought occurred to me, I was like, disposable? Like what? So you literally, disposable means you throw it away.
Right.
So you're like, we have no disposable income because we spend it on investments. But also, it's just, to me, that's such an awful idea. Like, you should not be disposing of your
income. Well, it's just, you know, I definitely lived that way kind of before we met. I definitely did save.
Yeah.
But any money that I didn't save, like if it was in my bank account, I'd spend it.
Yeah.
On food, on travel.
Going out, going to movies.
Whatever, you know.
Get a video camera.
I didn't really have like a vision for what I was it's doing other than just engaging in life. And it's no judgment to, it's my friends here who build these awesome video game consoles and, you know, buy awesome, cool guns. I mean,
the thing about them too, let's really put it into perspective. Like, and we were talking to one of these guys about how hard he's been working in the last 6 months to get ready for this conference. I mean, he's like, I work like 100 hours a week. Like, right. I work all the time.
Right.
So, yeah, he's like, I'm going to have a hobby. You right. know, I'm going to do video games right. and guns.
Because I guess, you know, the thing is you want something in your life where when you do have to work, I mean, we all work.
Right.
And when you're working, you can have something that's in the back of it, your mind. It's like, this is why I'm doing this.
Right.
Because I want to buy this new, cool, like,
yeah.
being, like automatic shotgun. Right. Or, yeah. I want that new servo to put on the back of the chair so right, it, like, right. Moves better.
Right.
You know, if you need those. Or guys who I know who are into cars. You know,
right, right,
and
right.
they buy, like, you know, they lease cars so they can always get a new car every right, three right. A year. It's like, that's, like, their...
Yeah.
It's reward yeah. for all the hard work
exactly.
they do.
Yeah, it's bleeding.
It's just interesting, though, people who are listening to this podcast, probably as many of us just don't think that way.
No.
You know, it's kind of like when, you know, there are now a lot of articles in mainstream press about hustling.
Side hustle.
And,
we hate that word, okay?
Yeah.
I really hate that word.
About people who have full-time jobs, but yet do other work outside their jobs, and that's all fine and good. But I find like very few of these conversations are then about like, well, what do you do with that?
Yeah, like why do you have
money?
A side gig?
Right.
Like what are you doing that
like,
for?
Are you saving it so you can, yeah, pay off all your student loans,
right.
pay off your house?
Go on
are
vacation,
you trying to invest in
what?
A business? I mean, again, everyone can do it's what they want.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just life. It's like,
yeah,
we do what we want. But it is an interesting concept of disposable income. And yeah. We've never really thought about any of our income being
disposable. Yeah, it's just a weird concept. I don't like it. I think it's just, yeah, consumerism in a bad way.
Right. Seriously. Know? Okay, let's talk about eBay. Incompetent picker on the forum. So he let everybody know, and now everyone's kind of talking about that PayPal... They sent out this thing. Oh, we made some changes, and I was just erased.
I don't care.
And I guess he actually read it, and he says that PayPal will no longer refund fees on your cancellations
or your refunds, like when you're
right.
refunding.
So if you cancel an item and then a refund their money,
PayPal keeps that right. money.
So if you sell something for $100, they're going to keep the 3.7%. Which is $3.70 for that.
That's
a refund.
Crazy.
Yeah, right? So, yeah. So, they said, PayPal says, we're changing how we treat refunds. If you refund partially or fully a transaction to a buyer, there are no fees to make the refund, but the fees you originally paid as a seller will not be returned to you. So,
well, look.
So, I mean, they're like, if you refund... $100 to that person, we won't charge you another $100.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Oh, great.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
God.
So this leads into
right.
there's now eBay starting to kind of, you know, they talked about it 6 months ago. Now there's some more info that's kind of being sent to us about a managed payments.
Yeah.
So eBay is trying to move from just being PayPal.
Right.
They're going to manage payments.
Right.
Where... they'll now kind of open up a whole array of ways to pay.
Good.
So
look, I already have because there are some sellers that only do managed payments because there was an opt-in and they're like, I can't opt out anymore, which is crazy. I put my debit card in
mm-hmm.
and that's how I pay for everything on eBay now.
Mm.
It is my PayPal debit card, so it
right.
is coming out of PayPal, but it could be any debit card.
Right, because when we buy those it's shipping supplies every quarter.
Right.
We get coupons, but we always buy more than what the
right.
coupons allow.
And that's managed payments.
And they don't take PayPal.
Right. So, you know, look, it's just like Amazon. Amazon, you put your credit card in and it sits there.
Right.
And that's it.
Right.
That's all it is. It's
right.
the same thing.
So the good things are, supposedly, this managed payment will only charge 2.7%. Which is a percent under
less.
PayPal. So that's
okay,
good.
So one good thing. What's yep. the next thing? Anything else?
Any money that you make gets deposited right into your bank account.
Right, so it's not in your PayPal.
So no longer does it go to PayPal, and then you have to transfer
it. It's like a direct deposit.
Right. And I don't quite – it was just like a blurb, so I don't really know how it works. They say now eBay will be the final decision maker in any conflict or dispute.
Because PayPal's not involved.
Rather than the buyer's not happy with what eBay says, so then they go to PayPal.
Open a PayPal case.
And open up a PayPal case. So
okay, so that's good.
So currently, though, right now, if you opt in, you can't do PayPal.
You can't do both, right?
Right.
Which sucks.
But supposedly this summertime, they'll also do PayPal.
Give you the choice.
So people can put in their credit card. They can do this Apple Pay, I think Google Pay.
Right.
And then they can also do PayPal. So buyers can just pick a range of stuff.
Well, what's it? So that's interesting.
And so we don't want to do it because...
I just want to wait.
As of right now, people, I think, are still pretty comfortable doing PayPal, so I don't want to change it up until they allow it.
So my question is, like, so that kind of sucks. Like, at one point, are you going to be like, I do not accept PayPal because their fees are messed up and
anytime
whatever.
Anytime you want.
You just are like, no.
I'm assuming you'll be able to pick,
just
and,
pick
choose
and choose
who you want.
So the question
but
is...
I don't really know.
Will they ever let us do cryptocurrency? Because there are no fees on that.
I don't care. Come on. Do you care about that?
Yeah. Why would I be saying it?
Because, I mean...
Because there's no fees.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's true, though, if there's fees. Anyway, I don't know anything about cryptocurrency other than it's not a mainstream currency.
It's not mainstream.
So. And then the other thing that... that managed payment can't do now is global shipping program.
Yeah, which is weird because you're like, it's eBay's program, so what the heck?
So they probably just haven't kind of hooked that together yet.
Yeah,
so.
Well, I guess it makes sense because it's like international payments, so...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know, if everyone has a PayPal account...
So, fine. I mean, overall, the kind of broad facts that I get about this, it seems like a positive thing. I'm always a little bit suspicious when eBay does these big changes, like it's going to be more of a pain in the butt. But this looks actually pretty good. You know?
I mean,
it's
people
got
to pay for stuff on
I
eBay.
Hope that fee is going to not just be like a one-time fee to bring people in and then they bring it back up.
Mm-hmm,
but we'll
mm-hmm.
see. Okay, what was your gut reaction to the week?
Well, we sold a bunch of stuff today, so I guess that doesn't really count.
Can't count today.
I would say medium.
Medium, yeah.
Like, okay, what, $1,500?
We made $1,300.
Nice, that's close.
See, so for us, our survival number is 1,000.
Yeah.
2,000 is like, hey, we're doing cool. So
3,000 is the best.
Yeah, $3,000 a week, and we're like, wow, this is pretty nice. So we're above our survival it's number, but I feel like eBay for the past several, like a month or two, has been pretty like, you know?
Yeah,
like
it's kind been of, mediocre.
Kind of very...
maybe the quality of our
soft.
Items are
so
not great.
Hey, we were talking about that. Why do we think that is? I mean, yeah, number one is...
I don't have time to source.
I think that we've been buying a lot of just wacky, weird, vintage-y stuff. And, you know, not everyone wants that all the time.
I mean, the other thing, too, is, like, what we should, in quotes, be doing is going
in quotes.
Going to an auction every once a week, dropping $1,000. And, like, because you always say, when we sell stuff, you're like, oh, that high-priced item, it came from an auction. I'm like, okay, great, go to an auction.
Yeah.
Like, we're shopping at thrift stores, like... Little piece here, little piece there. Like, it's just not, it's not high dollar items.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to.
Look at you. Look at you, Ryan. You're talking like a big shot. Yeah, I mean.
I'm not, talking like one, but not actually taking the action to, like, make enough money on eBay that we're, like, you know, happy with it.
Well, I think we, and again, everyone that sells on eBay is in their own, like, equation.
Right? Yeah.
They are
right.
In a real they're in an equation in their own mind. So our equation is we're doing other things.
Yeah.
We're going to Seattle to work.
Yeah.
We're trying to hurry up and finish this renovation.
It's taking a long time and it's taking a lot of money.
We're doing all these things.
Yeah.
So eBay, we're doing the best we can and we're not putting as much attention to it as we can. But it is but we've created all these pipelines.
Yeah.
And even it's with us, even though we're not putting in all of our time into it, it's still, I mean, that's pretty good. $1,300 in a week, I'll take it.
Yeah. You know? No, it's good. It's just, yeah, I wish it were higher. I do, you know.
And of course.
I think, I guess I just get frustrated because I'm like, even if it is like kind of like middle of the road prices, we have so many items. So you're like, it shouldn't matter.
I know. You know? But it matters always what kind of items.
Yeah.
It's not just the amount.
Yeah.
It's also what kind of items.
Yeah.
You know? So if a majority of our items are the wacky, weird, vintage items.
Yeah. That's just
the way it
is. It's harder to sell,
you know,
those.
It's different if we had 8,000 pieces of clothing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we know, like, there are some people in our forum who sell a lot.
Yeah.
And they don't have as many items as we do. But they're a majority clothes.
Right. So it's really
it's a
volume.
Different world, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. So what kind of things do we sell this week? Totally random stuff.
Totally random.
Mugs.
Shoes.
Bases, shoes.
Parts to old cameras.
A scarf. we did not sell the parts to old cameras for the week we're talking about.
Oh, that was today.
But we can mention that. You know, pants, shirts. I'm just going through it. We sold a tie, which we don't even buy anymore. Mm-hmm. But we do still have some up.
We have a
cover if we're a golf head, you know.
I
like
think we sold two of those. It is golf season.
That's
so
true. So it's good.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's like the most random assortment of stuff, which it always is, but yeah, nothing too high dollar. I sold some like bathroom plumbing stuff for over 100, I think. It was like a nice Kohler, like shower handle, like solid brass.
Yep.
You know,
it's ones we buy for our own rentals, and then we realize like, it's not going to fit, or we don't like it, or
I take the parts I need and then sell the handle.
That's
like,
true.
I don't want this handle, but I need the valve. I'll just sell the handle.
Yep,
and then I make my money back.
So let me try and get you in a better mood, okay? Because I feel like you're like grinding your teeth, angry. We just sold a bunch of stuff this morning. It's Sunday.
Yeah.
So according to eBay, Sunday's
this next
the beginning of the next week. But you know what? We'll still talk about it. We bought an old, like a Polaroid, I don't know what you call it.
It was like an enlarger camera. It was like the size of a table. Like the thing is huge. It's very specific.
A big tower. It had like the enlarger thing on it. And like we bought it from a local person for $10.
Because I was like, I can.
It sat on our porch
for six months. 6 months.
With a sheet on top of it.
You know why? Because I didn't want to look at it.
So one day, I bring it in, and I put it in the middle of our floor, and I say, let's list this or donate it.
And because, are you going to love it or list it?
And because you're the handy person of our house, you broke it down into all the logical pieces, and I found a site. Like one of those random like Angel Fire sites where someone had listed what every single piece is and gave us some like prices
sort of like, hey, I sold this for X amount of dollars.
Right. And then we just put it all up. And so today we've already sold several pieces from that already.
Yeah.
So we've already made like $300 on the
lot
already. But a guy today spent $500
on random assorted parts. Now, the first pieces we put up were the lights. They were like these lights that went on these like arm bar things. And they weren't, I mean, they were in, you know, the light bulbs were incandescent, but like the holder things were specialized. I sold those immediately, four of them for $120. And I hadn't even listed the rest of the stuff yet. So I was like, okay. And then this guy today gave me offers on like five of the pieces, and they're large. Like one of them's the base stand. It's like this huge piece. So that's going to be fun to pack. But We spent $10 right. on this
thing. I think we're approaching $1,000 in a profit already. And so this
right.
is where maybe I can change your mood.
My attitude.
This is a machine we've it's created here. You know.
Right.
So if we were selling clothes, we would probably be selling a lot more.
Right.
But oftentimes you have to pay a little more for clothes. You don't sell it as much. So, you know, you're buying for five, selling for 30.
You're listing a lot.
All good. You're listing a lot. It's a different kind of machine.
Right.
The machine we have is this, a $10 thing, break it up, make over $1,000.
Right.
I don't know. It's
yeah, you're it's, like, okay, it's that's just like not a different, bad,
it's,
yeah.
It's just like slower. A different equation, right?
I mean, like, it took several months for this guy.
Right.
To come along and be like, oh, I need these right. five parts. Right. Here's my offers. Can you combine shipping? Great.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's just a different equation. And so that excites me, though. That, I think, feeds into the, you know, excitement we have around scavenging. Is,
yeah.
Yeah, finding something so cheap and then doing the work to break it down
yeah.
and then sell the pieces for a lot more.
Yeah. No, I like parting stuff out.
Yeah.
I think it's fun. It's like one of those challenges where you're like, can I take this apart and will anyone need this weird random part? And look, my coffee maker.
Yep.
I did a second coffee maker that hasn't sold any parts, yeah. but I think I know why.
Right. Why?
Because it's a cheaper coffee maker. So someone's just going to buy a new one.
Because it's so cheap that if it breaks down, it's just easier to buy a new one for $100. I think you've right. got to find the coffee makers
that's
that are
like
$800 or $1,000.
Yeah. yeah. Those are harder to find.
Right. But it's still, I still enjoy the experiment. Okay, scavenge of the week. We lately, when we do these little trips, we are not scavenging like we used to.
Just also, we like used we didn't stay longer.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Oftentimes we'll go, someone pays to send us someplace, and then we'll stay afterwards for a week. And then scavenge, and then mail stuff back. And
yeah.
This time, we just, like, went for the week, and then we came back.
So. Yeah, just because we have a lot going on. I wish we could have stayed longer.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that's when our scavenging happens, because we're not working.
Right.
So we're like, oh, let's go to the thrift store, let's look on the street,
yeah.
and mail stuff back.
Why don't we go to an auction, you know?
Right.
Because I always feel going to an auction in a different place
yeah.
shows you what the place is like, you know,
yeah.
because you see a lot of local people.
It's
people
fun.
Talk about stuff that's happening.
People also notice that you're not from there
right.
if they're regulars.
We learn a lot of things about what's going on,
yeah,
about the neighborhood.
It is fun, yeah, so I like that.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay, customer issues. This week, it's been good.
Just had a couple of returns.
Couple of things that, I don't understand this, so maybe you can help me.
Yeah.
Someone wanted to return an item.
Right.
And they go through the automatic
yeah.
thing. And it accepts it.
Like, right.
We accept it. Like,
right.
we don't have to do anything. And then the guy writes us, send me a label. Send me a label. Don't they already get access to a label when eBay automatically accepts the return?
That is my understanding as a buyer and a seller.
Right.
I think sometimes people don't understand how to do it. What I need to do is I need to call Anchor Support and be like, what's the problem here?
Are we able to send someone a label?
Well, it's supposed to already send it
right.
to them.
So, but can we send them a label anyway?
Through eBay or just like pay for one through PayPal? I guess I could.
Well, I mean, the thing is we don't want to do it through PayPal because the whole thing about the eBay returns is that you get
like
a really
tracking.
Good
shipping
fee.
Oh,
shipping.
It's cheaper.
And
yeah.
it's in their assistant
right,
too.
Right, exactly. I don't know. Like, I don't know what the deal was.
Right.
If it was like, this guy is just like technically, cause I've had that happen before where you're like, they just don't understand like technology.
Right.
And most of the time they just like write your name on the package
right.
and put stamps on it.
Yeah. So that had been our only thing.
So that was the only thing. I do need to take the time to call Anchor Support and be like, what's the deal with this return? You know, is he just not seeing it or can you email him the label or like, sometimes they help you out like that. So
yeah.
But other than that, I mean, nobody needed
it's been good
to
so far. We're in that kind of like period where we're not getting a lot of returns. We're not getting neutral or negative feedback.
Okay. So here's an example. I don't know, since we didn't have a podcast last week, I had an international buyer who wanted cheaper shipping. It wasn't global shipping. He wanted first class to Finland. But I knew that mostly there's tracking all the way to lots of European countries. So I was like, fine. So I checked the tracking. It's on its way. He leaves neutral feedback and says, never arrived. Item never arrived. So I look at tracking again, and it was in his country. And I was like, so I called eBay. And
it stopped like at the
border. Well, it was in customs. Okay. It was like, it said custom clearance. So it's moving on to his address. Right. But I called eBay and I was like, I got a neutral. It's on its way. It's going very far away. So, you know, he's got to be patient. And they said, once it's marked delivered, call us back and we'll remove it. Sure. And that's what happened.
But and so that's good. But for all the people that are like, yeah, I don't do global shipping because a first class is fine. I mean, it seems like more often than not, this is what happens. You know, it gets caught in customs and it takes a longer than what the person expects. And so they start complaining.
Right.
They'll give you bad feedback.
Yeah, customs can take.
They start demanding a refund and you're just kind of hamstrung. You're like,
what can you do? You
can't. And sometimes the tracking number stops at the customs.
And
so it never says delivered. So a buyer could say it never got to me.
And get their money back.
And get their money back, even if they did get it.
Yeah.
That's just why global is so good, I think. Because
I love it.
Because they handle everything.
So. I actually don't know why I don't know if Finland for this particular item was just not in global shipping. And I'm assuming that's what it was. Because I never bump stuff out of global shipping. Even if someone asks, I'm like, nope.
Yep.
So it must have just not been in the program.
Okay, things we learned in the forum. Several things. So we'd been talking about someone started a thread of, we will never run out of stuff.
Yes.
And this person kind of wrote about how they went to like an estate sale and the house is just stock full of stuff. And he was just like, we're never going to run out of stuff. There's so much stuff in this country. And we were going back and forth about like, huh, I wonder if it's more just like the boomers. As long as they're still around, we're going to have a lot of stuff.
But right.
Do Gen X and the younger people have
anything?
Are we gathering as much stuff?
Right.
And, you know, who knows? I mean, it's no one knows.
Yeah.
Although I really feel like younger people are not collecting as much stuff, but that could just be because they're not old enough yet. Like,
when, right.
You know, the people who are 20 now are 60. And maybe you just get in that time of it's your life where you have a lot of income and it's just about collecting.
Disposable income.
Disposable income.
Right? They don't have any disposable income.
All those guys I was talking to are going to have all these
disposable income.
Right.
They have all these guns.
Although, you know, some of us were talking about how now, you know, a lot of it is about collecting. You know, that's what people have. They have their collections. Collections of pillows and
china and,
you know,
figurines
and all this stuff, guns and knives and
Okay, so we're in a hotel all week, 7 days. HGTV is like on our TV, as annoying as it can be. But like, there are people.
Trashy TV.
I love HGTV and I hate it at the same time. But like, I'll see young people doing designing and decorating, and they're like, here's my entire wall of, like, you know, whatever, you know, vintage, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, okay.
But my point is, and other people were talking about this too, these days, you can now still collect, you know, like, itch that bug by doing it digitally.
Online.
So you're collecting Pinterest boards.
Right.
Or iTunes. You know, just MP3s, you know, you could just do
or
a whole
Spotify
playlist of music.
Right? I do stuff like that.
Instagram, you know, you could just take photos of certain things and that's your collection.
Your online curation.
So you could have like a clean, uncluttered house, but still have endless digital collections of stuff.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
I don't know. It is an interesting idea.
Where you're getting the same satisfaction. Well, I mean, we talk about that as being eBay sellers. I have the same satisfaction of being, in quotes, a collector, but I don't have to keep it all. I do have a warehouse of it, but I'm selling it.
Right.
You know, I love vintage, certain, like, Japanese stoneware. Love it. I have two pieces I use myself, and then I just sell the rest.
Right. Right.
That's great for scavengers.
It's nice.
Know? Yeah.
Sharon, she wrote on the... its forum. She says earlier it's this year, a buyer opened a case for an unauthorized transaction. Mm-hmm. The transaction was in October, and the tracking available was no longer available.
It's old, yeah.
Because that happens sometimes, yeah. Right?
Like, right.
Which is super weird. Like, why would
they delete that information? Yeah.
So she says she did a little postage hack.
Yes.
On a USPS. She was able to, I guess there's a link somewhere.
You can request it.
Or you can request it as a, like, Freedom of Information Act.
But so what's weird is...
And you have to pay for it.
Oh, but, I never had to pay for it, but...
But although she says she got it refunded, okay, but... Yeah. But so that tracking doesn't actually go away. They just hide it from people.
I just wonder if... So it's weird that they hide it because that information still has to be stored digitally. So right. You're like, why not just give us access?
Forever, right?
So I don't know if it just costs more to give the public access because of bandwidth or whatever. But I have had that happen where they're like, this is older than X amount of days. Request it to be restored.
Because if you need to show that it got delivered... Right. So then PayPal says, oh, yeah.
Yeah, because you don't have that. Like, how would you have that information anywhere?
Right.
Like, you couldn't download all your tracking history. Yep. I don't even know how, which would be great if you could. But, yep. Yeah, that is a cool hack.
So if you're interested in how to do that, just go on the a forum, ask about it, and I'm sure we can post it.
Yeah.
Again, there's a whole thing about where to go and blah, blah, blah. So good for you.
Blah, blah, blah.
Okay, let's take the questions or calls that came in this past week.
Hi, Jay. Hi, Ryan. This is Seagal from Los Angeles. So I just finished listening to your 405 podcast. I have a first of all, thank you for everything that you do. It's pretty incredible that your consistency and all the content that you put out. It's very helpful, and so thank you. Helpful and inspiring. I have a question comment. So you have 8,000 items. And like you said in the podcast, sometimes it takes 4 years, 6 years, 2 years to sell some of it. When you go shopping, how does that affect your buying decisions? And the reason I ask is because I'm finding that I'll go to yard sales, swap meets, you know, estate sales, et cetera, but my tolerance for what I buy is becoming narrower and narrower and narrower. So I'm buying less, you know, items that I would have bought a year ago. I probably would have bought it, but now I'm like, no, it's still sitting in my inventory. I'm not buying that again. So how does that affect you? Do you find that you're pickier when you buy things now because you have things that you know are in your inventory, et cetera? So that's my question. Thanks again for all you do. I'll hear you next week. Bye-bye.
So this is a great question.
Yeah, great question.
And it all goes back to your own personal equation.
Right.
So, if you're worried about, you know, I guess we're not really hearing her reasoning other than it's taking a long time. So, is that because you're running out of room or you don't think it will ever sell? I mean, what's the reasoning? I'll tell you ours. And Orion can chime in here. For us, it's often about price. It's never about can we store this thing because we have decided we will... store anything.
Yeah, we'll store it.
So if we see it, like a $10 Polaroid camera mount thing.
That's as big as a table.
But it's only $10. We'll go for it.
Yeah.
Even if we know it's going to take 4 years to sell it all, we could make over $1,000 on a $10 item. So that makes sense for us. However, there are things where we start buying and we're like, these things sell really slow and they're kind of boring. So, for instance, like fondue forks.
Oh, my God.
I don't know, for some reason started seeing them everywhere. There's like 70s, 80s, these like fondue forks with like the
wood colors tea on the candles. Bottom.
And we're like, oh, great, it's a buck. And we're like, we have like 10 of these.
Or more.
And yeah, every so often they'll sell for $15, but we already have like 10 of them. Like,
yeah.
Why keep buying them forever?
I just don't get those anymore.
They're boring.
Yeah.
They don't sell fast enough. Yeah. You know.
Like ties.
Yeah.
Look. There was there were years. Number one, we didn't have an employee, so we like didn't list them. So they sat in a bin for like 2 years. Yeah. So then we finally listed them all. And I will buy like super mid-century skinny if it's cool, whatever. But I don't
Right.
I don't buy those. I don't buy them anymore. They sell.
Right.
Slowly.
Right.
Don't buy them anymore.
But for us, it's more about, it's not that we don't have the storage. It's just that they're kind of boring.
Like,
and like, that's yeah. a thing.
I mean, you know, there's certain things that, you know, we used to sell a lot of, and then we just were like, I don't care about this anymore. Like, I would buy certain popcorn poppers to roast coffee in, because it's like a thing that you can do at home. And then I just got bored. I was like, these are boring. They're hard to pack. They take up all this room.
And we don't make that much on them.
Yeah. I just don't care. Like, and I see them all the time at thrift stores, and I'm like, nope.
Right.
But yeah. And you know what? And it comes and goes in cycles. Like, for a long time, I'll be like, oh, I'm not going to buy that. I have too many of those. And then I sell a few of them, and I'm like, eh, I buy that again.
Yeah.
You know?
And so it is different, too. The equation for us is that if we're at, like, a thrift store and we're buying, like, individual items, we're probably more like you, where we're a lot more, you know, like, we're really, it's questioning, do I want this in my life? Because I'm buying an individual item.
Right.
So probably at thrift stores, we're not buying as much stuff. I know we're not. But these days, we're buying a lot more at auctions where we're buying a table of stuff.
Boxes so and boxes.
It's really,
boxes.
We're buying like the three items on the table that we're really excited about. And then everything else just kind of comes along with that. And then that's the stuff that we normally would not buy. But it basically, in my mind, it came for free.
Right.
It's on that table. Free. Yeah. And then that's just kind of often, sometimes junky stuff.
Sometimes it's junky stuff. And we donate it. I mean, so the last auction we were at, I was like, this glassware is literally should be recycled and never used again because it's garbage.
Although some of it is stuff that we wouldn't have bought, but then we realized,
this is nice. Yeah.
This is like super expensive. Yeah. And actually, it cost, we'll sell it more for than the other stuff we thought we got. So
that happens too. But yeah, it just changes. I mean, I think that you evolve over time. And, you know, some of the things, just like what you said, you know, some of the things I'll see in thrift stores and I'll be like, oh my God, I used to totally buy that. I would never buy that now. You know, like certain shoes or whatever. You're like, oh, just because you know, it's not interesting to you anymore.
Yeah. So ultimately, it's just kind of a game, you know. And as you get better and better at scavenging, you kind of learn what you're interested in, what it you know will sell, what won't sell. And
I remember in the beginning, I would not touch pottery or glass.
Right.
I wouldn't touch it.
Right.
I wouldn't look at it.
Right.
I don't care.
I think that's why I don't understand sellers who like have very specific things that they sell. Like, I only sell a video games.
Right.
I'm like, I mean, that's cool, but I don't know how would you build a business on that, because it just, a niche doesn't seem big enough to make a full-time income on, unless you're just like
spending a lot of time
looking for video games, you know? So for us, it's always about like, we'll sell anything. And we just like are always a learning new things
and shifting and changing over time.
Hi, this is Lady calling from Stanford, North Carolina. And I have a question for you guys. How is it that you guys know who it is you're selling your products to? Or your items to, are you guys Googling them, or are they contacting you before they purchase the item, or do the mailing labels contain their information? The only reason I'm asking is I know that we've sold a couple things to a museum up in New York, and we into a resort down in Disneyland, and the only way we've really known that for sure is that their information is, you know, printed on the label. That's the only way we've known. So just kind of curious.
Yes. So look, I think most of the time you don't know who someone is. They could be famous. They could be using a fake name, that blah, blah, blah. But the times that you're like, oh, this is a famous person, you either recognize their name, or they have an email address, soandso@suchandsuch.com, and you are like, what's that website? And you're like, oh, they're a designer in New York and whatever.
Or it's a prop house or something.
Or it's a prop house and it clearly says blah, 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 props in Atlanta, you know, and you're like, cool. You know, the guy who's the designer at Michael Kors, that's who I ship to, is like Michael Kors, floor 11, da, 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 da. And you're like, okay.
Yep.
But
they don't talk to us.
They don't talk to us. They don't tell us, like,
because they're probably buying from 100 other sellers too. The the times where we really know is, yeah, you Google their names and or their address. And you look on Google Maps and you're like, oh, they're in this building. And look, there's a sign on it.
Right. And like, you know, there are times where I'll recognize like really fancy zip codes or really fancy parts of L.A. or New York. And you're like, okay, who lives there?
And honestly, none of it matters. It's just kind of...
It's just interesting. It's just fun. Why does this person want this thing from me?
It's fun to think that any of us find this stuff in the corners of the world, and then it gets bought by someone, a designer, a set decorator, and then it gets put into culture again.
Right.
Either it shows up in a TV show, because, you know, there's all these 80s shows now, so so much eBay stuff is in those shows. Or, someone designs a new pair of shoes based on a design that they bought from you. It's just fun to think, like, there's that evolution, you know.
Well, also, like, for us, you know, it's not like I want to stalk them and be like, buy more stuff from us. Of course I want them to buy more stuff from us. But for me, what's interesting is that that person saw what you saw. They saw the same thing.
Right.
They were like, you know, you saw it and you were like, those shoes are from the 70s from some little brand that was a nothing brand. And, you know, the dude from Michael Kors was like, those are cool. Right. And I was like, yeah, those were cool.
It's a good feeling.
We're on the same level.
As a scavenger, it's a good feeling.
This is Eric in South Carolina. And I've got a question about an ongoing auction right now. I put it up at a 10-day auction. It's an item I found at a thrift store. And it's, I put it up really high because I didn't know the market. And I wanted to feel out the market, and I put an $1,100 starting bid on it. I did get several offers. One was, I think, initially like $700. One was $600. One was $450. And they all seemed legit. They were all from eBay folks who had been members for many years and have had have a lot of feedback in the hundreds. One of them was around 900 feedback. One of them was even a gentleman who said, I really like it. You know, I want to put it in my little homemade museum at my shop, or my store. So they all seem legit. And then I got a, offer or a bid. Actually, I got a question, from a gentleman who, just emailed me through the eBay messenger saying, I really want this item. I had it when I was a kid. How much will you take for it? And then, I didn't respond shortly thereafter. This gentleman had put gave me a $1,300 number through eBay Messenger. Still didn't respond. Ended up talking with this gentleman back and forth. He says, I really want it. Can I buy it before the auction starts? So I'm basically not competing against anybody. He didn't say that, but I figured that's what he meant or the reason he was doing it. And all in all, basically, I just said, look, I'm going to let the auction run. And he put in the first bid of $1,100. My question after all that is, do I have anything to worry about scam-wise? I never sold an item that is priced this high. And like I said, it all seems legit as far as offers I've been getting. But when I do get that final bid, even if it's just the first one, it doesn't run up. What should I do to protect myself so that, you know, when I ship this item out, the person doesn't try to say, you know, itemize as described, or this isn't what I wanted, or it was lost in the mail, I didn't receive it. Is there anything I should worry about? Because now that I know that it's a triple figure item, I want to, if for some reason the person who is the winning bid, at this point at $1,100 at least, it doesn't work out, I want to get it back and so I can turn around and sell it again. So can you give me some advice on how to handle an auction with an item that goes this high in price, how to protect myself? All right. Appreciate the podcast. I'm self-employed. I'm a painter, so I'm listening to you guys, you guy and you gal, all the time. Keep it up. Thanks.
So number one, congratulations finding something so cool.
I wish you told us what it was.
Yeah. I mean, it is exciting. I know for us when we were selling stuff for $10 and $15, the first time we found something that sold for even $200.
We were oh my God.
I mean, even today, we've been selling for a decade now. A $1,000 item is very rare for us. So, you know, big congrats. And I know that a feeling of just like, are we doing this right? Like, it just amps up the pressure.
It makes you nervous.
Of like, Am I underselling it? Is someone going to scam me? Blah, blah, blah. So, number one, your instincts was correct. If you're choosing to do an auction, we've had those things where people are trying to buy it off auction. Like, right. I'll pay you. The answer is just bid.
Just wait. Just bid.
Well, so if you're willing to pay $1,300, you hope someone else does too, and there's a bidding war, and you'll make more. So there's that. Now, number two, with auctions, it does happen where someone bids, they win the auction, and then they never pay. That's one downside of an auction versus just doing like buy it now.
Yeah.
Because they can win the auction and waste all this time.
Just walk away.
So that 5-day auction, you lose all that time, and then you'll probably fool around for another week afterwards trying to get the person to pay. He doesn't pay, and then you got to start all over again. And that's not a scam. That's just...
It's just a pain.
That's just like flaky buyers.
So we don't know what the item is, but... in terms of scam, in quotes,
I mean,
the only thing I can think of is that they would, you know, try to return it or say it's broken.
I mean, again, we talked about this before. I don't think we've ever really been scammed on eBay. We've had confused people, probably drunk, people with like active mental illness, but you know, not like some devious person who's actually like baiting and switching or scamming. I guess it can happen. If you Google it, there are definitely people. It seems like it happens every single sale is a big scam.
Right.
But I think that that's more of like their own perception. But what you can do is just you pack it well.
Yep.
Put insurance on it.
Yep.
Make sure all information, all conversations are happening through eBay. So it's being recognized. You can look at a buyer's feedback. Just to see if this is a kind of buyer that is consistently leaving negative feedback.
I mean,
we don't really do that, but I know other people do.
You know what? I've done it when they've left me negative feedback, and I'm like, oh, they do this for everybody. You know?
But if this is like some collectible, which I don't know, it sounds like it is.
Yeah.
It's normally someone that wants the item.
Yeah, you know? They want it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't be too worried. Now, I would love to hear after you sell it to call us back. Tell us how much you sold it for.
Yeah.
And what it was like to ship it out and stuff.
Yeah. And where you found it. I mean, something I have to remember too, and we teach ourselves this. There are people who sell on eBay who only sell high dollar items. So actually all of us are like, wow, $1,000 is like, man, that's like
Some people shoot
for the moon.
Yeah.
Some people are like, oh, $1,000 is like the lowest dollar item I sell.
Whatever.
I'm selling like $10,000 items.
I've seen those items.
People are selling like gold on eBay.
Gold.
I mean, just really go to eBay and search solds
gold
for
coins.
24 karat gold. And people are doing multiple $1,000 things. And I'm assuming they're not getting scammed.
Right,
you know?
Right. So good luck. That's an awesome story. Okay, that's it for the podcast this week. You can check out the blog at scavengerlife.com for the links we discuss and to join the conversation on the forum. You can leave a question or a comment on our voicemail line. The phone number is 540-407-8486, or you can email us an audio file from your phone. Our email is thescavengerlife@gmail.com. And we're ending this podcast.
In three, two, one. Goodbye.
Bye.